Tonight's shir, Parshas Bo. The Sabbah Mikelm used to say that probably one of the biggest miracles of Yitzchak Mitzrayim was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu came in front of Paro. And who was Paro? Paro was this wicked, wicked person. He was such a wicked person that he used to, you know, take the 300 Jewish babies and bathe them there daily in their blood. And you can imagine, the guy was a tyrant, okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu comes up to him and talks to him, you know, like, and Paro didn't do anything to him. And he brings one muck, another muck, another muck, and he says, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to him like nothing. He says, you know, that's probably the biggest miracle that Paro didn't touch him. So he says, Lechura, wasn't Moshe scared? Lamaiza, wasn't Moshe scared? So he says, that's how the Sedra begins, Bo el Paro, right? He could have said, should have said, maybe Lech el Paro. Hashem said, Moshe, go to Paro. He didn't say Lech el Paro, go to Paro. He said, Bo, where's Bo? Like, here, come. I mean, come with me. Let's go to Paro. It says, "Gamki elik b'gate salmavus lo ira ra." Right? Even in the valley of death, I'm not going to be. Why? Ki Hashem imadi. Hashem, when Hashem's with you, you don't have to be so scared. So Hashem said, "Bo el Paro, come with me." So Moshe said, "Okay, not so scared." Brings here a maisa with Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, the Panovich Rav, and he used to be the Rav of a place called Vij, and he later from there became the Rav of Ponovich. And when he got there, he started a metropolis of Torah. He started a whole it's Torah institutions, yeshivas and kolim and schools and the whole works. And he had about 2,000 students in this campus, and everything was going well until the new generation came in, and the Maskilim or whatever, the Enlightenment, and they wanted to change things. These are non-religious people. They're chalim nichilonim, and they said, you have to bring in secular studies into the yeshivas. You know, you can't have yeshiva without secular studies. They have to teach them Russian and mathematics, whatever. So Ponovich Rav said, nothing doing. Yeshiva is kodesh for kodesh. That's it. No secular studies. So they threatened them. They said, listen, okay, you have two choices. Either put in the secular studies like we're saying, because, you know, we're in charge now, we're the rove, we're the majority here. And so we call the shots. So either put in the secular study in yeshiva. If not, fine, we'll just push you out. We'll put in a rabbi that is in our, you know, like the agrees with our shitas, how we bring in secular studies, etc. And then also, two choices. Either you bring in, stay in your post and bring in the secular studies, or leave and we'll bring another rabbi in. We'll push you out and bring another rabbi. So, I meant the Panovich Rav was at a big dilemma. You know, they said, you're darned if you do, darned if you don't. What is he going to do? You know, stuck between a rock and a hard place, like they say. What is it? If he stays in, you know, he has to keep secular studies. If he doesn't, then they're going to kick him out. So, what is he going to do? So he said, can you just give me a day or two to give you an answer, what my decision is. So they said, fine. So what did he do? He went to the Chafetz Chaim. So he went to the Chafetz Chaim, and he told them his dilemma. And the Chafetz Chaim said, listen, I might not always be around, you know, for you to ask me these shailas. So let me tell you a klal, and from that you can, you know, learn for other cases for the future. He says, okay. So he says, Mashal Amad Davar Dome. He says, imagine, let's say you have two forces, two armies, you know, fighting with each other. He said, for example, let's say you have the white army and the red army, and they're having like a civil war, okay? So what happens? The civilians, they just hide in their houses, wait till, you know, it's over, and whoever wins, that's that. However, he said, what if the armies say that you have to commit yourself to one of the sides, and you have to stick out a flag outside your house, you know, the red flag or a white flag, you know, whose side are you on? He says, then what do you do? So he says, you have no choice, so then you pick the strong side. So if you got to pick one of the sides, so you side with the strong side. So Chafetz Chaim says, do you get what I mean? You understand what I mean? So the Kepharim Mitzvah was a little bit shocked, and he said, yeah, I understand, you know, thinking that, you know, I guess you have to give in to these Hilonim, they're the rove, and I have to give in to them, you know, and take secular study. So, you know, he said, yeah, I understand. So the Chavim says, what did you understand? He says, well, they're the rove, and I have to join with them, and what can you do? You know, he goes, no, I see you didn't understand. So he says, what do you mean? So he says, yeah, they have majority in numbers, but that's not what I said. I said, whose side do you join? The strong side. So who is the strong side? He says, we're the strong side, because we have a Kodesh Baruch Hu behind us. When did we see that? The Hanukkah story, right? The Greeks, and they were the rove, you know, and they fought against the mute, the Jewish people, but the Jewish people won. Why? Because they had more numbers, but we had the strength. Why? Because we had Kodesh Baruch Hu on our side. So you have to realize that Hashem's on your side, and you got to be strong. So, end of the story goes. Panovich Rav went back to the people, and they said, "Okay, Nu, what do you have to say?" And he said very forcefully, "Fine." He says, "If war is what you want, a war is what you'll get. I'm ready. I'm ready, and I'm ready to fight." So their reaction was, "Fight? You don't have to fight. Why fight? You can do what you want. It's okay. We're only making a suggestion." That was the end of that. Next. It says, Chazal tells Mishnah in Shmos Rabbah, Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyos Nigalu Mimitzrayim, that we left Egypt, we were redeemed from Egypt in the schus of the righteous women. So, question is asked, like, what was special about the women that, you know, we were redeemed because of the women? So they say, Avort, tongue-in-cheek, perhaps, that the Jewish people were supposed to be 400 years in Mitzrayim, but Lamai said they only left after 210. Why? He said, because what happened was the women said, look, we've on a soul, you know, we're supposed to be at 400 years of slavery, right? We've already been 210 difficult years, and we want to get out. So we'll make a deal with you, Hashem. You let us out now. Let the Jewish people out now, after 210. I, the missing 190 of Shibu, don't worry. We'll mishabet our husbands' guns fine. We'll cause them, you know, we'll enslave them, and that'll make up for the missing 190 years. So he said, the divorce is not so good. Why? Because it says, Nashim Tzidkaniyos. These are not Tzidkaniyos, you know, they're enslaved their husbands like that, or whatever. So he says, we can add touch it up a little bit different with a story from Rav Yeshayla Mushkat from Prague, the Baal Rashi B'Samim. He said that he had a wife that concerning her was said, Sheker Achein Ve'heva Lo Yofi Isha Yiras Hashem Hiti Salal. She was a Yiras Hashem. He said, why? He said, he would come home from davening and come into his house, and what did he see? His wife was davening. Comes home after lunchtime, after a hard day in yeshiva with the bachrim, the shirim, whatever. He comes home, and what happens? His wife is saying, in the middle of saying, Sefer Tehillim. Right? He comes on the afternoon, you have to go to Beis Din and be a dayan, whatever. He comes home, all exhausted, a long day. And what is his wife saying? Perek Shira. Right? So, he says, now I understand Pshat in Rashi. Right, Rashi says on the pasuk in Bereishis, right, Lotov yeyos Adam levado ese lo ezer kenegdo. The pasuk says that Hashem says, I'm going to make Adam an ezer kenegdo. So Rashi brings on the Chazal, zacha ezer. If the man is zocha, then he'll have an ezer, have a helper. Lo zacha, then kenegdo, and she'll be keneged him. So he said, now I understand the pshat in Rashi. Why? He says, if the man is zocha, then he'll have an azer, meaning he'll come home from davening, and what does he see? His wife made him a nice breakfast. And he comes home after a hard morning in yeshiva. He comes home, his wife makes him a nice warm lunch. And he comes over after a day in the Beis Din in the evening, and she made him nice dinner. That's zacha, azer. So, but what happened if he's low zacha? Then he's going to have a wife that's kenegdo, that's just like him. Kenegdo. He comes home from davening, she's in the middle of davening. He comes home from yeshiva, she's saying tilim. He comes home from Beis Din and she's saying perishira. So those are the nashim tzidkaniyos that are causing, so to speak, tzara to their husband that can mashlim 190 years. Okay, that's that pshat. He says, but another perish could be the following. He says that why dafka the women, the schus of the women. He says, because the women were extra careful in the inyanim of tznius and specifically tznius of clothing. They were very, and it says that Chazal tell us that we're nigal al shalom shinu levusham. They didn't change their clothes. They stayed with their tznius clothing, and we see it from the pasuk. It says in the pasuk that they were told to borrow from the mitzrim what klei kesef klei zahav usmalot. Right, the kelim of gold and silver and smalot, like dresses or whatever. V'samtem al b'neichem v'al b'noseichem. So he says, why? It didn't tell us what to do with the gold and silver. So why did it have to say, and the smalot to put on the children? Why did it have to tell them what to do with the smalot? I mean, he didn't tell them what to do with the gold and silver. So Terence says that what? That these women, they said they weren't going to wear these the clothing of the Egyptians. Why? Because they're not matim for their mini skirts. You know, they can't rock them with mini skirts. You know, so what did they do? So they put them on their little kids so that they're much longer. You know, so they can wear the kids so they can be tzniastic. So here we see that the women were extra tzniastic. They didn't change their clothing, etc. And we'll see. That's why they were nigal on their schus. Because based on the little maisi brings with the Chazanish, mentioned this before, that the Chazanish, the Rav Galinsky once went to the Chazanish and he met up with Rav Avram Yosef Wolf. He was the head of Zatzal. He was the starter of the Wolf Seminary in Bnei Brak. Anyway, so he was just coming out in the Chazanish and he says, "Oh, what's new?" So he says, "Oh, you know, I just came out from the Chazanish. I asked him an interesting kash and he gave me an interesting answer. What's that?" He says, "I asked him the following. It says that Kosh Baruch Hu tells us, Barati Yetzirah, Barati Lo Torah Tavlin. Right? That Hashem created a Yetzirah, but Hashem also created the antidote to the Yetzirah. What's that? Torah. Okay? And the Mesillas Yesharim brings down, since Hashem says this, he's the one who created man, so he knows the only, and the Yetzirah, he's the only one that knows and can know what is the antidote. If Hashem says it's Torah, and that's it. That is the only antidote for the Yetzirah." So I asked the Chazanish, he says, "That's very good with men, but what about women? They don't have mitzvah Torah, mitzvah Talmud Torah. So how are they supposed to combat the Yetzer Hara? If the only, it's Tavlin, the only antidote of the Torah, of the Yetzer Hara is Torah, then women don't have a mitzvah of Limud Torah." So the Chazanish told me, he says, that the men have Torah, and what do women have to fight the Yetzer Hara? It's Nias. That's their inim. If they're Makbina and it's Nias, then that's their way of fighting the Yetzer Hara. So Mimele, he says, now going back to the original question, why Nashim Tzidkanios? We said that they were makpid on the dress or whatever, they're makpid in sneas. At this point, this is before Matan Torah, men didn't have a mitzvah limud Torah, there's no limud Torah yet. So Mimele, where were all the schuyos amassed? By the women who were with sneas. So Mimele, b'tzchut Nashim Tzidkanios, nigalum mitzvah. Okay. It says, after the war, Second World War, he says he was, Galinsky was in a displaced persons camp in Germany, and there's an American, Mr. Fishbein, he was in charge of the place, and he started he felt it's important to have like a shul and a rav of the place and a beis din, etc. So Galinsky said, "I was made a dayan over there in this area." And one day, he says, "I'm walking along, and there's a great crowd of people, whatever, something was going on." And all of a sudden, they point to me, and they said, "Oh, here's a dayan, he'll solve the problem." So I get ushered in amongst his people, and I see a guy, he's all red in the face, all upset or something, you know. So I said, "What's going on?" So this guy tells me, he says, "I'll tell you what's going on." He says, the beginning of the war, we're in the ghetto. I was in the ghetto, and I was starving to death, and I was mamish on the verge. Like that was it. If I didn't have something to eat, it was going to be the end of me. And this guy over here, he's pointing to the guy in front of me. He goes, "This guy over here, I see him walk in front of me. He has a loaf of bread." So I came out. I said, "Please give me bread. Give me the loaf of bread." So he said, "No, chayecha kodmin. You know, listen, I come first. I need the bread, and I come first." So I said, please, fine. Then just give me half of the loaf of bread." So he said, "No." He refused. So I had this very, very precious piece of jewelry. It's full of diamonds, whatever, very expensive. And so I told him, I said, "Just give me a piece of bread and take this jewelry." He says, "Give me a piece of bread." So he said, oh, okay, fine. So he took my expensive piece of jewelry, he just broke off a little piece of the bread, and he gave it to me, and Mamish saved me, saved my life. I had that little piece of bread, it made such a difference, it kept me going. Anyways, after that, we ended up in the death camps, whatever, we both survived, and here we are again, you know, meet again at this displaced persons camp after the war, and I want my jewelry back. My piece of jewelry, because that's not fair. You know, he ripped me off. You know, for a little piece of bread, I gave him this, you know, piece of jewelry with thousands of dollars. You know, it's not fair. He's that's Geneva. I want my jewelry back. So that was the argument that was going on. So Galinsky said the chokhmah here was not so much how to paskin, but how to present the psak that they would accept. So he said, I presented it the following way. He says every mitzvah, he told these people, he says every mitzvah that a person does, he creates a defense attorney, a malach in Shemayim, right? He says, so on Rosh Hashanah, so all the malachim that are created, all the angels created from a person's good deeds, you know, they're there, and now decision has to be made, you know, how to psak for the coming year. So unfortunately though, you know, most of us, he says, our malachim are not such a healthy malachim. You know, Torah, how much Torah do we learn? It's in Lishma. How is our tefillahs? Our tefillah done with the proper kavanah? Our brachas are with our kavanah? So these angels are very skinny, scrawny, weak, limp, you know, and so the prosecuting angels up there, say to Hashem, you want to give this guy a good year, a year of life, whatever. Look at him. Look at this. These are his mitzvahs. Look at these scrawny angels. This guy's not deserving of anything. So what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu answer them? He says, listen, he answers the angels, Al tadun et chavercha shetegim l'komo, says in Pirkei Avos. You can't judge a person until you are in their place. You're up here in Shemayim. It's easy to talk. He says, you go down there, he says, it's a whole different story. Where do we see that? In our parsha, it says, and the by Makas Bechora says, "Vavarti beretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh b'kesi kol bechor beretz Mitzrayim ani Hashem." So this is a famous. We bring this down in the Haggadah and we darshan it, right? "Vavarti beretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh." I passed through Mitzrayim on that night. Ani v'lo malach Hashem says, "By my not no mal, just me." B'kesi kol bechor beretz Mitzrayim. I killed all the firstborn. Ani v'lo sarah. Ani Hashem. Ani hu v'lo acher. We say in the Haggadah. Hashem says, "I did it all by myself." So he brings Ariya Kadosh, says, why Dafka Hashem only? Why didn't he send an angel? He says, because if he would have sent an angel down to Mitzrayim, the angel would have become Tameh. You know, the Malchum was so polluted, spiritually, whatever, such a polluted place, a Malach would have become Tameh. So Hashem says, I have to do this myself, because I can't send a Malach. So we see such a thing, such a concept, that a malach, very nice up there, you come down here, your malach will be affected. Even he brings a raya from Sodom, right? It says that the angels that came down to destroy Sodom were punished. Why? Because they said, "Ki mashchitim anachnu esayir," that we are destroying the city. So we, as if they're doing it, you know, they had their own power, you know, kochiv yotzimiyad, you know, so they were punished. So yeah, how could a malach, how could a malach sin, like do a mistake like that? How come out to Teretzin? Because they were in Sodom. They came down to Sodom. Up there is very good. You don't sin. You come down here, you're affected by the pollution of the environment. Even a malach, there's a virus. So in Mela, he said, so if the malachim can be affected from down here, the matzah down here, so certainly human beings, we're living down here, you know, affected by the matzah. So therefore, what katayna, he said, can you have, is what Hashem's telling, you know, the malach, the prosecutor. He says, look, so what katayna can you have? Oh, look at their mitzvahs. Said anything they do, though, is something special, because look at where they're, you don't realize where they're coming from, where they're down there, and this one in the world. Right? It's a polluted place that, whatever they do, you know, kol hakavod lahem, okay, not so much kavanah, isn't that, but whatever they do is something special. And so he said that, that can bring back down and down to the case over here. So he says, so too, you see, there's different worlds. There's the world up there, of the worlds of the world of the angel. And that has its conditions and its matzah of whatever. And the world down here is a whole different place, and you can't compare. And there you can be a bigger righteous angel down here, and it affects you. So different times, different places affects people differently. So Meili says the same thing over here. He says before, you know, during the war, he says that was one matzav, and now after the war is a different matzav. Right? During the war, he says that bread was so hard to come by, a little piece of bread was worth, you know, to trade in for a jewel, it was worth thousands of dollars. That was, now it's the opposite. Now a piece of bread, I don't know how much a piece of bread costs. A jewel, oh, that's something valuable. Things changed based on the matzah. So he said, therefore, he concluded, and therefore, he said, you can't judge now and then. Look, he ripped me off. Yeah, now it would be a rip-off, a piece of bread for a $10,000 piece of jewelry. But that's now. But you can't compare now, and you can't compare then. Then, that's so you bought your life with that piece of jewelry. That bread was worth your life. So that's not matzah. That's the way it is. Can't compare now and then. Therefore, he says it was... you made yourself a good deal, and you have no right now to ask for your jewelry back. And they were masking. And he just concludes, and he says that the lesson, though, from Yetzias Mitzrayim is that even a person, though, might see himself that he's, down here in this polluted place, and he's tamei, or whatever case might be, but as we say, Ashreichem Yisrael, right, in the Yuma, the Mishnah, Ashreichem Yisrael, lifnei mi atem metar, mi metar eschem, avichem shem shemayim. Yeah, we might be in a bad matzah, but like, in the time Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem came down himself, so too Hashem comes and is metar ourselves, so we should, we have hope that Hashem can save us from all this terrible tumor that we're involved in. However, there's one condition. What is the condition? Well, we see also in the pasuk in this week, Sedra, Batem lo seitzu ish mi pesach beiso ad boker. You can't leave your house until the morning. V'lo yiten ha-mashis lavo ha-betech mingo. If you make sure you stay in the house, then the mashi is not going to have an effect on you. So Meila, he says, yeah, very nice. You know, we can hope that Hashem takes care of us, and even amongst the tumor, but that's only if we stay in the house, stay in our batei midrashas, and batei knesios. We stay in the batei midrashas, then Hashem will come, v'fet Hashem and save us. It says that Leil Makos Bechoros was in the midnight, at midnight, and the Jewish people didn't have schuyos to be saved at this point. So what did Hashem do? He gave them two mitzvahs. He gave them the mitzvah of Dam Pesach, the Shechita and the Korban Pesach, and the Dam Mila. Right? They said, V'orvor alaich v'arech mitvoseza b'damayich, v'omar lach b'damayi chayi, v'omar lach b'damayi chayi. B'damayi chayi, the Dam twice, that's the two mitzvahs. So what brings out from here, we see the how the value of a mitzvah is, how powerful the value of a mitzvah is. Okay, and we are told, of course, we have to be careful, even a light mitzvah, as it says in Pirkei Avos, because we don't know the schar of the mitzvahs, etc. But he gives an example, the Gemara in Kedushin. It says, a person that's mal, means he gets hana from something that's kodesh, you're not allowed to do, b'shogeg, so he has to bring a korban. So even if he's mal, I mean, he only gets a pruta, which is like 20 agurot, less, of hana, a tiny little hana, b'shogeg, accidentally, he has to bring a korban asham. A korban asham has to bring, minimally, is worth two slaim. What does that mean in comparison? A me'ila, getting hana, a pruta, okay, two slaim is about 2,000 times a pruta. Okay? So Rashi says, "Say v'chashov, see, come and make a cheshbon." Says Rashi, "Litrachek min avera, how you have to stay far away from avera." She'afal a shogeg, sorry, kapara gadola kagonzu. There's a shogeg. It was unintentional. You need such a huge kapara. What did I tell you? What a sin is. A sin, a little kapana pruta, 20 yagra. I hardly got any avera. So powerful that you need a huge kapara for a little sin b'shogeg. So, he says over here, on the other side of the coin, we have the power, therefore, of a mitzvah. You know, how powerful a mitzvah is. He gives the example of Klal Yisrael here. Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim. Just think about it. Okay, they were on such a low level, they were on the 49th level of Tumah. Okay? And not only that, when did Hashem tell them to do this mitzvah or whatever, they need the dumb head? This was just before the Makos Bechoros, right? Now, meaning, there was 9 makos already. Okay, this is the last makkah. So they had seen 9 makkos, and what does Hashem say? He says, "Mishchu chulachem." What's mishchu? Rashi says, "Get away from your avodah zarah." So here they saw 9 makkos, 9 miracles in front of their eyes, and they still were connected to their avodah zarah. What Hashem has said, separate yourself from your avodah zarah. Okay, so you can imagine their level. 49 level of Tuma, which we are. It says a minute more, it would have been too late. So they're 49. And it's after the 9 makkos, they were at such a low level and they were clinging to the avodah zarah. What happened? Hashem says, fine. Korban Pesach, Bris Mila, good. You're good to go. He says, what do you mean good to go? That's it? That those 2 little mitzvahs, that's you're good to go? So what do we see from here? We don't know the value of mitzvahs. Two little mitzvahs. No such thing as a little mitzvah. Yeah, bris milah. But he says it even more. It's stronger. Listen to this. He says that what happened, the Midrashim tell us, that Klal Yisrael didn't have bris milah. Another thing, they didn't do bris milah in Mitzrayim, right? Another part of their veris. So what happened? So now came the time for the Korban Pesach. So Moshe said, fine, you have to have bris milah. And then Hashem will take you out. You know, they can do Korban Pesach. Hashem will take you out. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it. No, we're not cutting ourselves. Right, but it's your chance to go to free. You know, you can get leave the bondage. No, we're not going to do Bris Milah. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He said, fine. So he had a Bris Milah. He made a Korban Pesach. And Hashem brought a wind from Gan Eden, the aroma from Gan Eden that made the Korban Pesach smell so good that they came running to Moshe Rabbeinu, give us some of that meat, give us some of that meat. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, no problem, just have a bris milah. Said, okay, fine. So they had a bris milah and they ate their meat and they... So he said, what do we see? Even the 2 mitzvahs that they had was Shelo Lishma, was it, right? They only did Bris Milah because they wanted to taste this delicious meat. And the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, they only ate because of this luscious, you know, flavor and the smell that it had, and that's why they did it. So even the mitzvah they did was only because they did it Shelo Lishma. But Bechozos, that was enough to take them out of the 49 level and then to be able to have this Chusta Korda free. See the tremendous power of even a mitzvah done, like we said, by Bishogeg, so to speak. Shelo Lishma. So he brings an example of that. He says, once I went to Rav Chaim Kreisworth, and that's all in Antwerp, the Rav of Antwerp, and that's the city of diamonds. So he welcomed me in, he said, and he says, let me tell you a din Torah I just had. He says, okay. He says, there was an agent who was dealing with diamonds, you know, and he was an agent selling diamonds for somebody, okay? And they got into a machloikas. Why? Because the agent claimed, okay, that he deserves his commission. What was his commission? 0.06% of the deal. 0.06% of the deal. He says, and the diamond owner said, nothing doing. I only promised you 0.05%. And this is their argument. This one won 0.06%. This one won 0.05%. And so did you ever hear such a dentor? So he said, that's ridiculous. What they're arguing about. So he says, not so fast. He says, you have to understand what the capital was. What were they dealing with here? He says, the money they were dealing with here was $15 million. That was the deal. $15 million. So if you make a hedgeman, what is 0.01% of $15 million? $15,000. So it came out that they were arguing about $15,000. That's enough to argue about. Right? So immediately he says the same thing. We say, yeah, mitzvah, what's a mitzvah? You know, little mitzvah. No such thing as a little mitzvah. Or a little mitzvah. It's huge, right? So here, a little tiny 0.01% of a huge thing is something. So here we said, come on, you know, they did this mitzvah Shelo Lishma. How could they be there? The Seder, the mitzvah itself is so huge that if you take it, even a little Lishma, whatever you do of it, it's still a big, big portion. It's 15,000 out of 50 million. 15,000 is still something. So Mela, they were deserving to be a Nigal. So we ourselves should be Zoicha to see the Gula, the present Gula, Bekar B'Yameinu.